Chapter 19. Squires, or why, on the other hand, Mr. Macy's official respect should restrain him from subjecting the parson's performance to that criticism with which minds of extraordinary acuteness must necessarily contemplate the doings of their fallible fellow men. The squire's pretty springe, considering his weight, said Mr. Macy, and he stamps uncommon well. But Mr. Lammeter beats him all four shapes. You see, he holds his head like a sodger, and he isn't so cashiny as most o' the oldish gentlefolks. They run fat in general, and he's got a fine leg. The parson's nimble enough, but he hasn't got much of a leg. It's a bit too thick downard, and his knees might be a bit nearer without damage, but he might do worse. Though he hasn't that grand way o' waving his hand as the squire has. Talk o' nimbleness, look at Mrs. Osgood, said Ben Winthrop, who was holding his son Aaron between his knees. He trips along with her little steps, so as nobody can see how she goes. It's like, as if as he had little wheels to her feet. She doesn't look a day older nor last year. She's the finest made woman as is, let the next be where she will. I don't heed how the women are made, said Mr. Macy, with some contempt. They wear neither coat nor breeches. You can't make much out o' their shapes. Fader, said Aaron, whose feet were busy beating out the tune, how does that big cock's feather stick in Mrs. Crickenthorpe's head? Is there a little hole for it, like in my shuttlecock? Hush, lad, hush, that's the way the ladies dress their souls. That is, said the father, adding, however, in an undertone to Mr. Macy, it does make her look funny, though partly like a short-necked bottle why a long quill in it. Hey, by jingo, there's the young squire leading off now. Why, Miss Nancy, for partners. There's a lass for you. Like a pink and white posy, there's nobody I'd think as anybody could be so pretty. I shouldn't wonder if she's Madame Cass someday, arter all, and nobody more rightfuller, for they'd make a fine match. You can find nothing against Master Godfrey's shapes, Macy, I'll bet a penny. Mr. Macy screwed up his mouth, leaned his head further on one side, and twirled his thumbs with a presto movement as his eyes followed Godfrey up the dance. At last he summed up his opinion. Pretty well downard, but a bit too round eye the shoulder blades. And as for them coats as he gets from the flittin' tailor, they're a poor cut to pay double money for. Ah, Mr. Macy, you and me are two folks, said Ben, slightly indignant at this carping. And I've got a pot o' good ale, I like to swallow it, and do my inside good, istid o' smelling and staring at it to see if I can't find fault why the brewing. I should like you to pick me out a finer limbed young fellow, nor Master Godfrey one as 'ud knock you down easier, or as more pleasanter looks, when he's pure and merry. Chuh, said Mr. Macy, provoked to increased severity, he isn't come to his right color yet. He's partly like a slack baked pie, and I doubt he's got a soft place in his head, else why should he be turned round the finger by that awful duncy as nobody's seen o' late, and let him kill that fine hunting hoss as was the talk o' the country? And one while he was a-lays after Miss Nancy, and then it all went off again, like a smell o' hot porridge, as I may say. That wasn't my way when I went a-courting. Ah, but mayhap Miss Nancy hung off, like, and your lass didn't, said Ben. I should say she didn't, said Mr. Macy, significantly. Before I said nif, I took care to know as she'd say naff, and pretty quick too. I wasn't a-going to open my mouth, like a dog at a fly, and snap it to again, why nothing to swaller. Well, I think Miss Nancy's a-coming round again, said Ben, for Master Godfrey doesn't look so downhearted tonight. And I see he's for taking her away to sit down, now they're at the end o' the dance. That looks like sweethearting, that does. The reason why Godfrey and Nancy had left the dance was not so tender as Ben imagined. In the close press of couples, a slight accident had happened to Nancy's dress, which, while it was short enough, to show her neat ankle in front, was long enough behind to be caught under the stately stamp of the squire's foot, so as to rend certain stitches at the waist, and cause much sisterly agitation in Priscilla's mind, as well as serious concern in Nancy's. One's thoughts may be much occupied with love struggles, but hardly so as to be insensible to a disorder in the general framework of things. Nancy had no sooner completed her duty in the figure they were dancing than she said to Godfrey, with a deep blush, that she must go and sit down till Priscilla could come to her, for the sisters had already exchanged a short whisper and an open-eyed glance full of meaning. No reason less urgent than this could have prevailed on Nancy to give Godfrey this opportunity of sitting apart with her. As for Godfrey, he was feeling so happy and oblivious under the long charm of the country dance with Nancy, that he got rather bold on the strength of her confusion, and was capable of leading her straight away, without leave asked, into the adjoining small parlor, where the card tables were set. "Oh no, thank you," said Nancy, coldly, as soon as she perceived where he was going, "not in there. I'll wait here till Priscilla's ready to come to me. I'm sorry to bring you out of the dance and make myself troublesome." "Why, you'll be more comfortable here by yourself," said the artful Godfrey Colin. "I'll leave you here till your sister can come." He spoke in an indifferent tone. That was an agreeable proposition, and just what Nancy desired. Why, then, was she a little hurt that Mr. Godfrey should make it? They entered, and she seated herself on a chair against one of the card tables, as the stiffest and most unapproachable position she could choose. "Thank you, sir," she said immediately. "Needn't give you any more trouble. I'm sorry you've had such an unlucky partner." "That's very ill-natured of you," said Godfrey, standing by her without any sign of intended departure, "to be sorry you've danced with me." "Oh, no, sir, I don't mean to say what's ill-natured at all," said Nancy, looking distractingly prim and pretty. "And gentlemen have so many pleasures, one dance can matter but very little." "You know that isn't true. You know one dance with you matters more to me than all the other pleasures in the world." It was a long, long while since Godfrey had said anything so direct as that, and Nancy was startled. But her instinctive dignity and repugnance to any show of emotion made her sit perfectly still, and only throw a little more decision into her voice, as she said, "No, indeed, Mr. Godfrey, that's not known to me, and I have very good reasons for thinking different. But if it's true, I don't wish to hear it." "Would you never forgive me, then? Nancy, never think well of me, let what would happen. Would you never think the present made amends for the past? Not if I turned a good fellow, and gave up everything you didn't like?" Godfrey was half conscious that this sudden opportunity of speaking to Nancy alone had driven him beside himself, but blind feeling had got the mastery of his tongue. Nancy really felt much agitated by the possibility Godfrey's words suggested, but this very pressure of emotion, that she was in danger of finding too strong for her, roused all her power of self-command. "I should be glad to see a good change in anybody, Mr. Godfrey," she answered, with the slightest discernible difference of tone, "but it 'ud be better if no change was wanted." "You're very hard-hearted, Nancy," said Godfrey, pettishly. "Who might encourage me to be a better fellow? I'm very miserable, but you've no feeling." "I think those have the least feeling that act wrong to begin with," said Nancy, sending out a flash in spite of herself. Godfrey was delighted with that little flash, and would have liked to go on and make her quarrel with him. Nancy was so exasperatingly quiet and firm. But she was not indifferent to him yet, though the entrance of Priscilla, bustling forward and saying, "Dear heart alive, child, let us look at this gown," cut off Godfrey's hopes of a quarrel. "I suppose I must go now," he said to Priscilla. "It's no matter to me whether you go or stay," said that frank lady, searching for something in her pocket, with a preoccupied brow. "Do you want me to go?" said Godfrey, looking at Nancy, who was now standing up by Priscilla's order. "As you like," said Nancy, trying to recover all her former coldness, and looking down carefully at the hem of her gown. "Then I like to stay," said Godfrey, with a reckless determination, "to get as much of this joy as he could tonight, and think nothing of the morrow." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.